Welcome back, Ruby Tuesday. I'm Patrick Ruby of Sports on Earth, and today we're going to have some fun. Now, some of you may not know this, but in addition to all the serious stuff I write about, I'm a bit of a sports video game nerd, and that goes back, way back. Not just Madden and NHL on the Sega Genesis. I'm talking Double Dribble, Blades of Steel on the original Nintendo. I'm talking Hardball and Fourth and Inches on the Commodore 64. Floppy disks. Now, I used to write a lot about sports games at ESPN.com. So as a journalist and as a gamer, I try to keep up. So now, with keeping up, we've got two things going on this week. First is Black Friday. Holiday shopping. It's kicking off. And part of that is we've got two new game consoles that have just come out. PlayStation 4, Xbox One. That's going to mean new and hopefully improved sports games also coming out. So to talk about this, where sports games are going, we have a great guest, Rob Jones. He is a senior game designer and producer at Visual Concepts, which is the main developer behind the 2K Sports line of games. So that's not just the former MLB, NHL, and much-beloved NFL 2K series. It's also the current ongoing NBA 2K series, which for my money is the best and most consistent sports game out there. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Patrick. Thank you for having me.
So you and I actually met in person a few years back. I was writing this long history of the Madden football franchise, and I know at one point in your career, you actually worked on Madden. How did you get started in working on sports games, and what games have you worked on over the years?
Oh, I don't know. I was a huge fanatic. I mean, I played a ton of games. I mean, my game go back to the Commodore 64, one-on-one, Dr. J versus Larry Bird.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hey, did you have to put a fan on your Commodore 64 disk drive so it wouldn't overheat from, like, too much playing?
No. I wasn't allowed to play that long, so
okay.
You know, my mine didn't overheat that much. But I do remember having you had a disk drive. I had a tape.
Wow, that's even more old school.
So I'd been a sports fan for so long that once I got to college and we started playing, I think we had a league with the Intellivision basketball game that was out at the time. We played a bunch of football games. I don't know if you remember Zor Football Challenge. I think that was the name on it. It was like on a PC. It was all X's and O's. And that passion just led me to becoming one of the better Madden players at the university that I was at. And so I kind of just decided to try it. I had an engineering degree. I figured that I kind of understood things and I could break them down. And so I got a chance at being a QA analyst at EA under the Madden team, and I just went for it. I remember leaving Michigan with two suitcases.
I mean, so look, you have an engineering degree from Michigan,
uh-huh.
which is an awesome school. And you have a very hard, very marketable major, and essentially you decide to take two suitcases. I'm going to go down and be a game tester. And this is before sports video games like had totally, totally blown up, right? It was a good industry, but it wasn't like what it is now, right?
Well, I think that the Madden franchise had kind of already turned that corner. I don't know about everything else, but
mm-hmm.
that everybody was already, on that on the pre-order, on the waiting for the release date. I mean, they were starting to have those Madden release things that where I was at, it was called Babbage's. I don't even know if you remember that
I
name.
Do remember Babbage's.
Became...
That's how old we both are.
Yeah. So it was a chance to kind of just, get in there and start working on sports games. And, given that I was such a sports fanatic, no better place to start than with Madden football. But over the years, I did Madden football, I did NBA 2K, I did our college hoop series here. I started that.
Oh, the late great college hoops 2K, much beloved by sports gamers, much lamented. We'll get into that later, but keep going.
And then more NBA. You know, basketball is kind of where Madden was my passion from a video game standpoint. I actually learned the sport because of the video game. But I was trained as a basketball player from the get go. So being able to get into the sport that I love was kind of like the cherry on top for working in sports games. So,
well, looking back at those games that we grew up with. Now, again, looking back through your designer glasses with the benefit of hindsight, what made those games good back then? Like, why were they so fun?
You know, I think it was a combination of, simplicity with depth, which is, something that to this day I think we strive for. You know, you want everybody to be able to pick it up, but then you want people who master it to really be able to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of the sport. And I mean, like I said before, for me, a guy that hadn't even grown up in the United States, to pick up football and learn all the rules and become a huge fanatic of the actual, live sport, because of a video game. I think it says a lot about how exciting those moments were for us. And a lot of them were left to our own imagination. I remember guys, telling me why Walter Payton was so good in the video game, and if you go back at it, now, and it's like, well, they all moved the same. What made this one guy different than the other,
It's like Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl or Jeremy Roenick in NHL is still a god. I mean, when I was a kid, like, to me, yeah, I know everything about the 1994 NHL season because of playing that game. I know all those rosters. I know every player. It's kind of amazing how you can learn that as a kid. I'm curious. You talked about simplicity with depth. Back then, I have to think, given the sort of limitations of the hardware you're playing these games on, designing these games on, you've got controllers with a couple buttons, got pretty simple graphics, pretty simple sound, just pretty limited amount of memory. I have to think the simplicity part might have been easier than the depth part sometimes for game designers. But I almost wonder now, when we're talking about these new consoles and the amount of sort of computer firepower they have and the number of buttons and just everything about them, is the simplicity part now the hard part and the depth the easy part?
No, I think you could still make a fairly, a fairly simple game. The problem is that because of all the buttons and because of, the all the options that people want and kind of expect, that there's this tendency to overcomplicate things, and kind of expect the user to catch up to that interface, and if you look at, like, for example, 2K14 right now, mm-hmm. One of the things that we did this year is introduce a completely new control scheme for us that was actually meant to make things a lot easier for people to kind of get into.
It's 2K14. I remember NBA 2K on the Dreamcast. You guys have been doing this for a decade and a half, refining, evolving this game. How do you strike that balance of, we're going to introduce something new and hopefully make it simpler and more accessible, but we don't want to tick off all the people that already like this game and are playing it year after year?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that kind of comes with our territory.
Right.
It's one of those things where, internally we have to figure out a way to open this franchise up to more people. An example would be, years and years and years people clamoring for us to put dribbling moves on the right stick, but we weren't doing it because we were very happy with what we were doing in terms of shots on the right stick.
Mm-hmm.
So you had camps on one side, camps on the other. Then last year we tried to create a hybrid, but that hybrid was a little bit complicated to the point that once you learned it, unlearning it was kind of tough. What we've introduced this year, kind of puts those two functions, really at the player's fingertips or at his thumb, to be honest, in a way that is very, very accessible if your mind's open to just trying it. And if you're new, it's a lot easier because you don't actually have any preconceived notions.
Right.
But we do believe that, going forward, everybody will figure out, hey, you know what, that was the best choice that anybody could have made.
Right. I mean, it seems like you almost have to try to cater to those two camps. You've got the people that have been riding with the game and they've mastered it and they've really got it down. Like you said, there's that other audience, like, we want to get more people playing this. You know, how do we bring in the new people without alienating the old people?
Yep.
That's got to be tough, I think. When you're trying to design and test, I mean, how do you literally do it? Do you bring in a bunch of people that have never seen an NBA 2K game before, never held an Xbox controller, a PlayStation controller? How do you do that?
We have done that, you know, especially when we needed to figure out if something was going to work. You know, we've done focus testing. There's a couple companies that actually will provide, you know, testers or just individuals who are into video games and who will just kind of tell you what they feel about the usability. You know, one of the things that you can notice, and that's actually an interesting point, you know, if you look at it, the game still includes those two traditional buttons that really make basketball as simple as we remember it, right? Mm-hmm. There's a pass button, there's a shoot button.
Right.
You know, and there's a ton of people who still really only rely on those two things as well. So, you know, you're creating, you know, for the expert and for the guys who are willing to try, you know, we're giving them everything that they can, you know, that they can get their fingers on, and they can work at mastering. And then for those people who really want the simplicity, you know, the two button scheme just works out perfectly for them.
Yeah, I think we're always going to probably have those two buttons in basketball games. Can you see a day when those are gone, or is that kind of like, no matter what changes,
you know,
design, we'll have those two buttons?
In our dreams, you know, we're like, hey, if we could ever get rid of those two buttons, we could open up so much more that people could do. And then we realize that, you know, we'd also be losing a bunch of people if we ever took them away. So it's one of the things that we, you know, that we've always kind of keep in mind as we're thinking about that.
So, I had a chance to try out 2K14 on the new PlayStation 4. A friend of mine actually got it, like, on launch day. I went over to play it for a few hours. I mean, visually, it's a total showstopper. I mean, you know how, like, there's a $200 million movie, and they say you can see the money on the screen? Like, you could see whatever you guys spent making this game, you could see it on the screen. It's incredible. It's close to photorealistic sometimes. But, you know, sports games are not just how they look. I'm curious, both in terms of the aesthetics, but also in terms of the gameplay and even some of the outside features. When you look forward over the next 4 or 5 years, and you've got these new consoles now, and you're going to see them getting more and more adopted by gamers, with the technology they provide, like, do you have any sense what they're going to allow you guys at 2K, and also other sports developers to do, and sort of where we're going to see sports games evolve and become more refined?
I don't know that we can actually put the finger on how far we'll be able to go. I do know that there's an internal dream of what we'll be able to do, and, you know, and that's what we're aiming for. And I think in terms of features, you know, I think that everybody's trying to get people more involved, to spend more time with these games and experience them differently than they have before. You know, I think that one of the things that, you know, I always have this conversation with some other friends in the industry, and it's like, you know, for the most part, the game experience in sports games has not evolved. You know, so you do get you do get better graphics. You might get better better animations or better AI. Mm-hmm. But how you experience the game has not evolved from the original 2D games that we've played. So, you know, in a lot of ways, I think that we're trying to figure out, hey, can we enhance this? Can we get people even more connected to what they see on screen? And I think that that's one of the things that we attempted to do this year with 2K14, in terms of, you know, making it so real that you could almost, you know, feel like you're there, or feel that you could touch stuff,
you know, that
you see on the screen.
You know, I noticed that not just with, you know, again, I'm kind of like a quick game guy. Like, I just like to get in, and like I said, I like to play the actual games on the floor. And in some ways, it's the same thing I was doing with Lakers versus Celtics on the old Sega Genesis. But I saw with 2K14, And especially at the next gen, there seemed to be this, and I think other sports games have been doing this too for a couple of years, this move towards other modes where it's almost like role-playing games, like whether it's My Player or now you guys have this My GM, where you're not just doing the create a player, and you're not just doing the, like, I'm going to run a franchise mode, but it is like an RPG. There's, to do a really old school reference, it's almost like a Zork element to it. But I mean, it's like you're sort of, in this whole sort of immersive world where you're having to make a lot of decisions. And it seems like in some ways, like, some of the same ideas that go into RPG games of like leveling up and things like that. Is that one of the ways that we're going to see sports games evolve? Does that seem to be something that the audience is generally receptive to, that people like, they want more of?
I don't know. I don't know if they want more of it. I do know that sports games in general have kind of taken the approach recently that, in the me generation, it's more about what can I become? What can, what can I create myself to be, and how can I become a superstar? So to create that experience that kind of involves me as a character is a big deal. Remember those books where, you made all the decisions?
Yeah, Choose Your Own Adventure.
Choose Your Own Adventure.
I remember those. Books? I'm sure nobody under 20 listening to this right now has any idea what we're talking about, but go on.
But there was something to that, as boring as they got very quickly. Right. There was something to that concept about, charting your own path. And so, I think that to get that individual player kind of involved when when his friends are not around or something like that, we can't just force them into, hey, keep playing quick games or keep playing a season, and try to actually create something that is, caters more to them and to the things that they would like to do. I know it resonates a lot with the younger players. I don't know, the older players are more, they're going to be more attracted to something like a MyGM or actually controlling a real franchise, or maybe dealing with particular players that they, that they already are looking at or they're reading news about. But for the most part, part of playing these games to me is to take you into another world and kind of let you kind of escape for a few hours. Or however long you have to play and do something that you normally can't do in real life. And I think that that's really the experience that even in sports games we're trying to achieve now.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, and I like the fact that these sports games now offer these different kinds of experiences. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't have enough time to usually even try these modes very much. Like I said, I stick to the quick games because I don't even have enough time to really master the controls on those. But I mean, I like the fact that, I look back, like if I was still like 13, 14 years old right now, I could see myself just sinking endless amounts of hours into this, which I think is great because you're giving people a lot of value. And I think that's almost like sort of what the market expects at this point. I want to ask you one more question about these new consoles. When you look at the way they've been built, you're the engineer, not me, but it seems like the chipsets are fairly similar overall, but there are some differences in design emphasis. The Xbox One, from what I can tell, it's got a little more of its horsepower devoted to overall multimedia functions. It's got this motion sense and camera system. The PlayStation 4 seems like it devotes a little more to being able to really push the maximum graphics you can throw on the screen. I'm just curious, over these next couple of years, do you think the differences between these two consoles will actually play out in sports games, or are we going to see things be pretty much the same across the board and the experiences be pretty much the same no matter which one you end up buying?
I can't necessarily tell that at this particular point in time. I think we'll have to figure out how they evolve. I think that if you look at the Xbox One and what they're doing, I think that there's going to be some advantages to their peripherals and their peripherals, and their environment, whether it be glass or Xbox Live, that will create an experience that can be different than playing on a PS4. I think it always ends up being in the hands of the developers. what they decide that that they can create. I think a lot of people or a lot of places, you know, will end up creating, you know, two games that are very similar on both platforms, just because they don't want to alienate one or the other. And then I think people who kind of buy into one more than the other, you know, into one more than the other, will actually turn around and create an experience that is so different on that specific platform that, you know, you'll want to purchase that particular game. So, you know, I mean, I just think that there's so much more that they've just begun to scratch the surface on both things. You know, that the next 3, 4, 5 years are going to be extremely exciting in terms of where these games go from here.
Well, one thing I hope for, like you said, the Xbox has the Kinect camera with it. I know PlayStation 4 has a camera that's kind of optional. I'm really hoping in the NBA 2K, you talked about sort of the personalization. I'm really hoping we can get like some sort of crude facsimile of a face scan in there. So if you're going to create yourself in the game, it really, really looks like you. I've been waiting for that forever. Maybe I'm egotistical, but I think a lot of people would love that.
You're not the only guy that's waiting for it. I'm waiting for it myself. Not that I want to see my face in the game, but, you know.
Oh, you're not tucked in there as an Easter egg player somewhere? I thought you guys always put yourselves in the game.
I didn't do it this year. You know, I think the day that everybody was doing the scans or everything, I hadn't groomed appropriately. And I just couldn't see myself scruffy in the game, so.
That's funny. I want to ask you something. Looking back historically on these console transitions, they've been hit and miss for sports games. I remember when the Dreamcast came out, NFL 2K was mind-blowing. We never really see anything like it. PlayStation 2 came out, Madden was really, really solid. When the Xbox 360 came out, NBA 2K6 looked great. On the other hand, the first Madden game for Xbox 360 was pretty much a disaster. And when the first PlayStation came out, this is going a little old school here, EA botched it so badly that they actually canceled the PlayStation version for that year. I think, like, what do you remember about what happened with that? And what does it say about just generally the challenges you and other sports game makers face when these new consoles launch?
Well, I mean, I actually lived that PlayStation launch or not launch, because it was right as I first got into the industry. And what I'll say is, you know, a lot of it has to do with not necessarily what the developer didn't do, but what the focus on the product was. You know, and if you give somebody a directive, you know, you kind of have to figure out that that's what they're going to try to deliver. And so, you know, I just remember that our focus, or the focus that had been given to the developers at the time, you know, wasn't clear, or wasn't about making the best playing game. You know, I think that if you remember well, the PlayStation was the first one. We were going to be able to put everything on DVD. We're going to be able to, you know, we could create more TV-like experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, so there was a lot of focus on how we were going to present, and not a lot of focus on how, you know, the gamer's experience was going to be.
Right. And so almost jumping ahead to the bells and whistles you can add because of the new medium, the new memory, the new technology,
right,
and sort of,
right,
oh, by the way, we also have to make a game that plays well still.
Yeah, and so, you know, so you kind of have to come out with the appropriate focus. And I think, you know, I think that the guys who got it right kind of realized, hey, you know what, nobody's coming back to play your game if it's not that good, you know. I mean, the only time I can say that that seemed to have worked was for NFL Quarterback Club that first year on
another old school reference.
Yeah, on N64. You know, they came out with a game, you know, hey, we're 640, we're 640-480, we're gorgeous, blah, 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 blah. And then you look, you know, and then you could run around the corner and linebacker would never even move, you know. But people bought into it because, you know, when you first get that next console, the first thing you think about is, you know, how far has it come visually?
Right.
And you kind of run into, you know, you run into that. And only after you figure out, hey, I just wasted my money because I can't play this, you figure out that it wasn't worth it. So I think that our, you know, what we've been able to do here is been able to stay focused in on, you know, delivering on both fronts, but always remembering that we had to deliver on a game side.
Well, you know, from my limited time with NBA 2K14, it really does feel like an expansion and simultaneously a refinement of a good game you already have going on the current generation. You know, it's like it looks better, it plays more smoothly, but it doesn't feel like you threw out everything that worked about the NBA 2K series and try to do something completely different. So I'm wondering, you know, is making that decision, I'm sure it's the one that makes sense from a sort of like practical, how are we going to put a game together standpoint, but it's also drawn those lessons of the past of seeing those times where companies lost their focus and try to do something too different or too new or something that just wasn't the right time to try to pull off.
Well, you know, I mean, and you can say that, unfortunately, that's one of those things that, that can sometimes happen. And sometimes, you know, you're aiming, like I said before, you are aiming at kind of redefining a genre or redefining a game, just because you kind of feel like, hey, it's your only shot at breaking into an audience. And you know, you take a chance, and it can backfire on you. So, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, you kind of always have to be wary of, you know, because, I don't know, as a sports fan and sports gamer, I think that my expectations of what I'm going to get are pretty set in stone. And so, you know, as long as you hit those, you know, you hit those check marks, I'm always a happy camper. It's when, you know, it's when you think that you're going to give me something and I wasn't really looking for that, and you take away one of those things that I think every sports game should check off, you know, that's when I start getting upset.
Was there anything in 2K14 where you guys were really sweating it till close to the last minute of like, oh man, are we going to be able to pull this together? Is this new thing going to work? Or do we make a big mistake trying to add this or improve this?
I just think that we were very ambitious with what we've done, and we're very proud of you know what we've released. And I think that the biggest thing for us was, oh man, that was a lot of work that we put into it.
How much work did it take? I mean, because you're still also improving and putting out current gen games too. How many years? When do you start planning the new generation NBA 2K? Like, how much time do you actually have? Like, how much bigger do you have to make your teams? Do you split your teams? I mean, it seems like a lot would go into making that transition smoothly when you were also still making current games.
You know, the thing is that, you know, we always had like a smaller team already working on it, and then the people who were working on the current gen, I mean, we just really had to balance out what we were doing. But we start planning, we literally will start planning for the next year when we are in the midst of submission for the year before.
Oh wow!
You know, that way, as soon as everything clears, we're ready to go.
It's tough on sports game developers, right? Because, you know, I think of other games, and most of them seem to be on like a 2 to 3 year cycle a lot of times. Even something like Call of Duty that comes out every year, as far as I know, they have like two different development teams that alternate years. In sports games, you guys have to come out every year. You have to hit a certain date when the season starts, and you're the same developer. I'm just kind of wondering, like, what kind of crunch does that put you under? And in terms of what you can do to sort of improve and innovate with the game year after year, does that mean you actually have to plan stuff out over like 2, 3, 4 year cycles?
There are bigger things, yes. You know, I think that things that we know, you know, what happens is a lot of times is that we figure something out during the process, and we, you know, but once you've figured it out, you start planning for it. So what, you know, you start building what you're currently doing for the future. You don't build something and then you're like, well, I'll scrap that at the end of the year and we're going to put this new thing in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just kind of, you set it up so that it can be incremental. And so that's one of the big things for us. I mean, you know, yes, it is tough. I think we've gotten a lot better at kind of managing those times just by being more efficient. I mean, if you've ever been around a video game company for a long time, like I have, you know, you'll realize that in the early months, people have a tendency to not work as, you know, with as much focus as it is in what people consider the crunch months. And what we've done is we've just kind of spread that all out across the entire year so that when crunch hits, yeah, you know, we may have to work a little bit more, but not to the level that you know, we used to. Let's put it that way.
Oh, look, I'm a journalist. I know all about, like, working much harder when deadline's approaching than when it seems, like, far away. That's interesting. I need to work on that whole spreading out that deadline panic into a longer time frame. That makes me more efficient.
You know what? I've been in this industry for like 17 years. I think we've figured it out in the last two.
I want to ask you about, there's this concept. It's kind of from robotics and also computer graphics, the uncanny valley. I'm sure you've heard of it. Basically, people listening, the idea is that when you're simulating an actual human, the closer you get to the real thing, the more the little details that aren't human stand out and actually will bother you. Now, I think that this principle applies to sports games, and not just with the player likenesses, but the things like the way they move, the in-game behavior, the CPU coach strategy. You know, when I think of NBA 2K, it's a series that has gotten more and more realistic each and every year. Like I said, I've been playing it since it started, so I've seen it evolve. I'm wondering, when you get feedback from players, when the avid gamers are asking you, we want you to change this, we want you to fix this, do you find there's an element of that uncanny valley to what they're asking for? Like stuff I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I actually think that, you know, most of your observations are fairly acute. I mean, and they're the same ones that we're making and we're trying to improve year in and year out. And yes, you know, it's one thing to create perfect behaviors, you know, but it's the hardest thing a lot of times is creating human failure. Because, you know, I remember talking to Gary Plummer a long, long time ago, famous linebacker, you know, for the Chargers and Niners. And one of the things he told me, he's like, you know, we go into these coaches' meetings all the time, and, you know, I grade out perfectly every week. You know, I do all my assignments. I do exactly what they ask me to. And he's like, he goes, and Junior Seau goes out there, and he's never where he's supposed to be, but he's got this uncanny instinct to make plays. So he doesn't grade out very well, but he's a Pro Bowler and he's a superstar, you know. And, you know, and his point was that, you know, a human does things differently, and every person is a little bit different. And that's the part that's really, really hard for us to achieve. I think we're going to keep improving on all the things that we expect people to do, you know, to move in a better way, more seamless, to not look like they are computer controlled, but that human, like, you know, mental mistake thing or anticipation, that's the one area that, you know, I think that we kind of still have not got a great grasp on, and that we, you know, that we need to improve on.
Well, look, I mean, we don't even have a great grasp on that in the real world. If you're a coach trying to manage your players' personalities, if you're a player trying to manage your own emotions, if you're a psychiatrist trying to understand human behavior. So I think it's forgivable that in the video game world you're still scrappling it as well. I do want to ask you, though, it does seem like that's something that you're trying to introduce to this new generation. Like, you know, last generation we saw in NBA 2K, like, signature styles. We saw, like, sort of signature animations for players. Obviously, we've had player ratings forever to differentiate them. The graphics are getting so much better, so the players look different now. You don't have to squint and pretend that's Kobe Bryant anymore. It really kind of looks like Kobe Bryant. In terms of this psychological stuff we're talking about, though, it does seem like with 2K14, you guys are taking sort of the first toe in the water to try to incorporate that into the game. Tell me a little more about that, how you do that, and where you'd like to see that go.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we've always tried to do here is kind of figure out why, you know, certain players whose God-given abilities should make them superstars don't perform like that. You know, or
hey, this is the Gerald Green problem in the NBA 2K series, by the way. It was like the greatest video game player ever, but in real life, he's just a dunk machine, and that's it. Yeah, it was.
I think Rudy Gay is the same way. I think, you know, I think J.R. Smith has been that way, you know, and it's one of those things where we realize that personality you know, emotional response to things that happen in the game affect people differently.
Right.
And so that's what we tried to recreate this year with Emotion Plus in the next generation of our game, create a situation where we could assign each player a particular personality, and then also kind of measure their reaction to different events, you know, whether things are going well for them or badly, poor calls, you know, teammates not getting them the ball when they're supposed to, you know, these little things that on a day-to-day basis kind of influence the way you play. I remember when I was playing, you know, I was never a great jump shooter, you know, and one of the things that would bother me to no end and then actually take me out of my game was when somebody would just step away from me and ask me and then go, hey, go ahead and shoot that. You're not making that, you know.
Right.
You know, you're
insulted.
You were insulted, but what's your reaction, right? Do you get better or do you get worse? And I think that trying to achieve that is actually making people more human, and that's kind of the first thing that we've wanted to do. And the thing is that the game, with the ability to really, really show emotion through animation, through facial reactions, things that we couldn't do in current gen, you know, really lends itself to really start kind of taking that first foray into an area that I don't think that games have ever really tried to go, to be honest with you.
That seems like, you know, a hard thing to model. I mean, definitely I could see now you could model a guy, it looks like he's fired up now, but to actually model how it would influence their play, and I mean, like, I don't know, like in game, if someone is in a good emotional place, do their attributes go up, do they become quicker, are they better shooters, does it change if they're set, can you see them sulking? You know, I didn't get to spend enough time with the game to really see that part of it, but is that what we're talking about? Is that where you really want the game to go?
The essentially what happens is that, you know, their mood actually starts affecting their play, you know, if you know, giving them boosts in the different areas of the game that they're doing well or they're doing poorly in. So, you know, you could make a couple of dumb defensive plays and then suddenly, you know, find yourself making more of those. And the thing about it is that the reactions and, you know, what you see, the way you see the player react to a particular situation kind of tells you what mood he's into.
That'll give me a gamer a cue.
That's the only cue you're actually getting.
Right.
So you don't get a thing on screen that tells you, hey, you know, your mood is now great, you know, but you see the guy react to a play, you know, if he did something great, you see him, you know, and you know that emotional level is rising, or dropping, you know, depending on what it is.
Well, I think that's a terrific idea. I definitely want to see that improve and be refined and grow, because I think that's obviously, like, to me, that's like a lot of the next step in sports games. One thing I'm curious about with that, how do you scout, like, player personality types? I mean, because, you know, I understand, like, you're doing ratings for shooting and ratings for jumping, and there's a lot of, like, actual hard data you can look at, whether you're talking about shooting percentages or what they jumped at the combine or all these kinds of things. I know there's an art to player ratings too, but when you're getting into, like, well, what kind of personality type does this guy have? Is it like a total art? Like, how do you even figure that out?
Well, that one right there in itself is a little, you know, it's a little tough. I don't think that, you know, we'll ever get everybody right, because all we're, you know, what we're doing is we're doing, you know, I mean, we're being a little bit more thorough in terms of, you know, watching games and kind of trying to take notes on people. But in the end, you know, some of it is subjective. I'm still waiting for somebody to call us and say, hey, you know, that's not me.
I mean, because, look, you're getting into my turf now. Like, I have to go write personality profiles of these guys.
Yeah.
You have to read those. You should hire some feature writer to come and just go interview guys and figure out their personality types. That's not a hint. I'm good with my job right now, but no. But let me. I want to ask you one more thing about players, and maybe this ties into what we were just talking about. When I was doing that old Madden story, I remember the main athlete liaison for EA Sports, this great guy, Sandy Sandoval. He told me this really funny story about back in the early 90s. You know, he went to the 49ers locker room trying to pump up Madden, EA Sports. Most of the guys in there could have cared less about sports video games. They pretty much thought, oh, video games, that's Pong, that's Pac-Man, whatever. You know, when we're talking about today's athletes, it's obviously completely different. They've all grown up on sports games. I would say most of them are pretty avid players. I'm wondering how involved the actual players are, how involved they can actually be, given that they're not, you know, programmers or designers or have engineering degrees from Michigan, in making NBA 2K14.
Well, I mean, you know, to be honest, they can be as involved as they want to be, you know, in terms of just kind of giving us a better understanding of what we're doing wrong in the game. You know, we're lucky enough that the Warriors are close enough, and that there's a couple guys who are just incredible fans, Harrison Barnes being one of them. You know, and a lot of times you'll come in and you'll play and gives us straight up feedback as to what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong in
What's the
terms
best
of.
feedback you've gotten from him or from any of these guys?
Well, I mean, I can't pinpoint, you know, a specific one that I've gotten recently, to be honest with you, just because we had so much flux going on this year,
Sure.
you know. But from the standpoint of, I mean, we had Darren Collison show up here a couple months ago and literally stay locked up in a room playing our game for 2 days, you
Wow.
know. And we were sitting here and we were just like, you know, it's kind of strange, right? Because these guys are your heroes and you're their heroes, you
Right.
know. But when, you know, you want brain dumps. Hey, what can we do better? What doesn't feel right to you? You know, am I, are we closing out too fast? Are we reacting too fast? You know, how's the dribbler feel? You know, you name it, you know, and that's what they bring to us, you know, in terms of that. And then sometimes we'll just sound them straight up out on, you know, we'll tell them, hey, you know, the way we're implementing, you know, our defensive rotation schemes in here is based on this. You know, does that sound right? Because obviously they're being coached that. And so, you know, they can give us some basic basketball side feedback that allows us to improve what the computer's doing or the decisions the computer makes.
Do you find that guys who play the NBA that they want the game to be as realistic as possible, or do they want it to be a little more like weighted toward the unrealistic but potentially fun NBA Jam side of things?
You know, I think our fan base, or at least our most most vocal side of our fan base, wants it to be a true basketball game, you know. But the truth is, you wouldn't be at the size that you are if you didn't provide a little bit of both.
Sure.
And that's what we're working at. That's the hardest thing to work at, is to create that balance, because so many of us are such hardcore basketball fans that, you know, we want to do what, you know, what's real. And what's real is not always fun,
No,
you
a
know,
lot of times
so.
what's real is like setting a pick and getting
Yep.
banged, like getting a jump shot. It's not always a double crossover and then dunking on three people.
Yep. So you got to kind of have to provide both things to both sets of users, and give them the opportunity, you know, and give them the opportunity at least to be able to customize that experience, so that it can skew. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have a default mode and we have a sim mode. Things change really quickly in terms of, you know, what happens in the game when once you move the game to that sim register. So.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, I hear you. I'm still wrapping my head around the idea of Darren Collison playing the game for 2 days. But also the idea, like I said, of, I just wonder, you know, like if there was some, this wouldn't be fun, and no one would ever make this, but if there was, you know, sports journalism 2K14, the game, like, I don't know if I'd want it to be as hard and tedious as my actual job is sometimes. I would want it to be like easier and more fun. And it amazes me that some of these guys that play basketball for a living, and I'm sure there are ups and downs, and I'm sure it's a lot of times not an easy job, are you know, pushing you in the direction of, oh no, make sure, you know, the picks are right, make sure the defensive rotations are right. Like, I don't want it to be super easy for me, Darren Collison, to get in the lane at will. Like, I almost think if I was Darren Collison, I'd go the other way, give myself 99 every ability, and just like like make myself a dunkosaur. But maybe that's just me.
Well, you know, I mean, and I think that's pretty much everybody out there, you know. But that's why you got the LeBron Jameses of the game, because he makes real game play feel like video game anyway. So.
Right. Oh, by the way, Cover Athlete looks just spectacular in the game. Of course, I checked him out first. You guys did a really, really good job, his likeness. And, you know, I went and checked out a little bit of, you know, you guys have put some videos online of sort of how you went about doing this. It looked like you guys did some pretty good head scanning. You guys did some, like, motion capture with some of the players' expressions. Some of the player faces and likenesses in this game are so dead on. It's not like any game you've seen sports-wise before. I mean, besides LeBron, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Durant. You know, I'm here in D.C. I checked out John Wall. He looked pretty good. He had like sometimes he looks a little pouty on the court. I feel like you guys got that in the game. And they look amazing. Most of the players I saw in the limited time I played looked amazing. But a couple of them were off, and they were way off. And I'm also worried again if it's an uncanny valley thing, because some of the guys look so good. But when I saw Mecca Okafor, for instance, he looked like an extra from the old Fox Alien Autopsy special. It just made me, we were laughing the whole time we were playing. So here's my question about that. This is pretty simple. You know, you guys obviously put a lot of love and time into care to getting these guys' faces right, into getting sort of as much as you can of what they look like, right? When a guy is way off, what happened? Like, what's the difference there?
I mean, well, there's two things, right? You know, we were lucky enough that so many players were really, really into it that we were able to scan for likeness over 80% of the league. But that does leave 20% of the league that we actually have to create by hand based on photo reference. So, you know, hopefully, people who see themselves in the game and don't necessarily appreciate the way they look will be more open to the old, to the whole process of being scanned and getting their appropriate expressions into the game for next year.
How long does that take to scan a guy? And how do you go about doing that? Like, do you have to go chase these guys down in the off season? Do you show up at games? Do you show up at like what do you?
That's
how
what
do you
we
do
did
that?
Last year.
Really?
Yeah, we essentially tried to set up either at games or at their hotel so that they could come in. It takes about, I don't know, 5-10 minutes per player to knock out all of the scans and all their expressions. But you know, our team actually flew around the country to make sure that they could meet teams that wanted to do it but couldn't get to us. We went to them. Mm-hmm. You know, but like I said, you know, some people declined, and hopefully seeing the results of those people who didn't,
right,
you know, will be kind of an incentive to say, hey, you know what, let me make sure I'm in there next year.
Right. Now, you kept the classic teams in the game, too, which I was really impressed with. I wasn't expecting that, the Next Generation stuff. And I assume that you're not going around scanning, like, you know, 50-year-old Michael Jordan and 50-year-old Joe Dumars, but you guys are working off photo reference for those guys?
We are.
Okay. Because a lot of them look really good, too. Like, they look surprisingly good. A couple of them I would have guessed that you had scanned somehow, but obviously you don't have a time machine yet.
Well, we took a lot of care. You know, obviously that was something that was really important to us, you know, in past editions of the game. So, you know, we were able to kind of take some of that work and really, you know, enhance it for next gen.
That's one of my favorite features in the game. Is that something that will continue going forward, sort of having those classic players, classic teams? Is that something you guys like too? Is it feasible financially?
You're dating yourself right now, just like I am, you know, because every time I hear that, hey, you know, I love those classic teams, it always comes from somebody like me and you who kind of grew up in those eras.
Right.
Kind of romanticize that. That said, you know, I think that it's an intricate part of the fabric of the NBA, you know, maybe more so than any other sport, you know, people's styles, people's game were completely derived from other guys that came in the past. You know, I mean, you see right now Dwight Howard going out, you know, Dwight Howard and pretty much everybody else trying to go out and glean as much as they can from Hakeem Olajuwon, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, I mean, you look at Kobe's game and how he patterned it around everybody, you know, and Michael, you know, and Michael probably started getting his game from somebody else, you know. So there's this legacy of this guy was able to be very effective because he had this move. How can I replicate it and/or enhance it into my game? And that's, I think that you see that more so, like I said, more so in basketball than in any other sport.
It's very fun as well. Maybe this is just me. I like to be able to take some of the classic teams, you know, like you have a classic Lakers team that has like rookie Afro Kobe Bryant. You could put him against current Kobe Bryant. I like just doing that even within the same guy within a different generation. It's kind of fun.
You know, and for those who didn't know how good Kobe Bryant was when he first came into the league, it's an easy reminder of, you know, of, oh my God, that guy was incredible. You know,
he was a totally explosive athlete when he first came in. I mean, that's why he could still be, you know, so effective now, even though he's so much older and been through a lot of injuries. I mean, and obviously he's so much more fundamentally sound now, but I mean, people do forget like how explosive he was when he first came in. Let's talk really quickly about motion controls. You know, my second favorite sports game of last generation was actually Wii Sports. I think a lot of people love that game. But, you know, Nintendo made like one sequel. That was pretty much it. They never really expanded on it a big way. And I know some traditional sports games tried to graft on Wii controls, but it never really felt right because it was like they weren't really designed from the ground up for that. Are we pretty much done with motion controls for sports games? And is there some reason that never really took off? Even though the Wii was a huge success?
Well, the Wii was very, very simple in its implementation of sports. You know, you didn't have to move a lot. You know, you could do everything standing in one place, essentially, right? And you didn't have to dribble the ball in the house. You can remember what your parents mm-hmm. said about that. So, you know, it kind of lent itself a little bit. You know, I think it was different, and I think it was interesting. But in the end, I think that was the calling card for the Wii.
Right.
Whereas I don't think that it is the calling card for, you know, regular sports video games. So it's kind of hard to integrate a peripheral that kind of takes control away from you.
Right. I think it would be really hard to integrate into a basketball game. You know, I totally understand Sam, that.
Yeah.
It seems like maybe boxing or tennis are probably the two, or
well,
golf.
Because you control one guy.
Things. Right, exactly.
You know, you control one guy. So, you know, if you think about it, if you were only controlling one guy, you know, possibly, but I just don't, you know, I've never found a good application for it in the way that we see it from you know our development side.
Sure.
Now you and guys, we want to.
Yeah. No. For sure. Now you guys, including in addition to NBA, you guys now make a WWE game, right? That's under
we
the
do.
2K house now. Now 2K used to make NFL, mm-hmm. the dear departed NFL. They used to make an NHL game. Used to make MLB. I know you guys had a boxing game 1 year. And that wasn't really unique. I mean, it used to be, again, dating myself a little bit here, there were dozens of sports games kind of for different companies. And look, they weren't always good. I mean, you had a lot of Mike Ditka power footballs in there. But there was a lot of variety. So you would see like a development team that may not be able to pull off an entire game that was good, but they could come up with maybe like one really good idea that other games could then steal and incorporate. I don't mm-hmm. know if you see that as much anymore sports games. You know, we've got a million Call of Duty clones. But to me, it seems like the sports game numbers are actually shrinking. Just wondering from, you know, again, looking at as someone who's been in the industry for a long time, like, why do you think that's the case? And do you feel that's good or bad for sports gamers and even sports developers like yourself? that there's all this consolidation going on.
Well, you know, I think what you find just in games in general is that, you know, unless you're a small independent game that isn't costing a lot of money to develop,
right,
nobody's really going to invest the type of resource that it takes to deliver, you know, an A-plus mm-hmm. licensed game for sports. So, you know, I do remember there being a lot of other games out there. I do remember a lot of games not even needing a license, and
right,
and doing just fine, you know. And the thing about it is that, you know, everything's changed. You know, the NBA's marketed its way. I mean, you don't really think about basketball outside of, you know, either NBA or college, you
right
know. I mean, for a little while, you know, the whole And-One series got kind of big and they were able to play on that, but they played on that for about a season,
mm-hmm.
you know. So my point being that that I think it's a lot tougher to be able to kind of make that jump into the video game genre. And you look at it even in Call of Duty. I mean, how many clones are out there? But how many of them have survived? You
true
know, you're really just down to just a couple now, you know. So I think that's not just sports games. I think it's gaming in general.
Is it almost like sort of the blockbuster, like what you see with blockbusters in Hollywood, you know, the big summer movie bets? You have to spend a lot of money to make a lot of money. So
I think that you have to have something that really, really creates an experience and
mm-hmm.
and generates a particular type of response for you to want to continuously invest in it. You know, I mean, a lot of places might do something as a one-off, but
sure,
do you think that, you know, when you look at it, one-offs aren't cost-effective?
No,
because
you
spend all this time building something and then you're not using it anymore and it doesn't make a lot of sense.
In video game football, the smartest way to play has always been don't punt, spread the field, pass first, go no huddle. In basketball games, you always want a dunk or a three-pointer, and you're better off gunning a lot of three-pointers. And that used to be video gamey. It wasn't sim. It wasn't simulation, right? But now when you watch real sports, these are the exact strategies most teams use, and they use them because they work. They're actually the most efficient. So I'm wondering, as someone who's been making these games for a long time and has been a sports fan for even longer, did you ever think, wow, we spent all these years trying to look and play like the real thing, and now the real thing is looking and playing like us?
Well, you know, what I think the athletes changed, you know, and so once you have so many guys who are specialized in a specific type of play, you know, you look at the Warriors and how many three-point shooters they have out there, you know, that it kind of just naturally has progressed. You know, I think we have a lot fewer dominant inside players than we ever had before when the game first started. And so, you know, so maybe it's A, we don't have the centers, or B, we don't need the centers because everybody else can shoot so well from the outside.
Right.
You know, but I think that the game has evolved, and it hasn't evolved. I don't think it's evolved because of the video game. I just think that people just train better. I mean, just flat out, I go out now, you know, and I think to myself, hey, I was a pretty good player. And I look at kids today as they're practicing and as they're shooting, and I'm like, but at 13, that kid is three times the player that I was, you know. And so you look at it, and I think that this new generation of athletes is just more skilled than we ever were, and therefore there's been this evolution of the game, and you see it in play now.
Well, hopefully their understanding is also, again, coming from the advances of something like NBA 2K. Hopefully, you know, all that time Darren Collison is spending is translating into a more realistic game, which is translating to smarter youth players. Rob Jones, it's been an excellent podcast. Really enjoyed it. The game is NBA 2K14. You can get it on PS4 and Xbox One. It's also available on current-gen consoles. Anyway, people can follow you or follow 2K on Twitter, Facebook, any way they want to learn more, where they should go.
Yeah, you know, you can follow NBA 2K on Twitter and Facebook. And me, I'm just Rob Jones 2K on Twitter.
Awesome. Will you come back and do this next year when we're talking about NBA 2K15?
You know, if you'll have me, definitely.
Terrific. And you know what? By then, and we'll talk about this next time, I hope to see a new 2K football game. In the meantime, I'm Patrick Ruby for Sports on Earth, saying goodbye, Ruby Tuesday.